Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, wind power investing. What are the current risks and opportunities? Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. Wind power. It's been around for a very long time, but it is gaining an increasing amount of attention as an important segment of the renewable energy industry. What should investors know about the field? Here to talk with us today about that is Stephen Pugh, partner at London-based Hermes Infrastructure, which is part of Federated Hermes, with more than $4 billion of assets under management. Stephen, thanks for joining us today. Tell us more about Hermes Infrastructure and what you do.
Sure, and great to be with you today. So the infrastructure team of Federated Hermes was founded in 2011. Most of our clients are typically pension funds, and what they're looking for really is long-term stable returns for their members. The ESG considerations are very much at the heart of everything we do, and they're fully integrated into our investment process. We're a direct investor, and what this means is that we invest directly into the assets and play a key role in their management, actively representing our investors on the boards of our portfolio companies. We're primarily focused on core infrastructure. This means companies that provide an essential service and are less exposed to market volatility. And our portfolio now has a mix of renewable generation, regulated utilities, and transport, amongst other sectors.
So today we're focusing on wind energy. How did Hermes get involved in that area?
We were actually one of the first institutional investors to get involved in the renewable generation sector with the acquisition of two wind farms in Scotland back in 2013. We've also invested in rooftop solar and energy from waste, as well as expanding our activities recently in the onshore wind sector with a portfolio of wind farms in Sweden.
Well, the idea of wind-driven energy certainly isn't new. I mean, we've seen it for ages. When we think of Holland, we think of windmills as one of its iconic symbols. In old American Western movies, a windmill pops up at some point on a farm or a ranch. What's different now about wind power and its possibilities?
You're absolutely right. Harnessing the power of the wind is nothing new. Even predating that back to when sailors first started using it to propel their vessels across the seas. And later, windmills were developed that were used to transform this power into industrial uses, such as grinding grain into flour, pumping water, and even powering industrial wood saws. But there are very many things that have changed since that period, from the use of the power that's generated to the sheer scale of modern developments over the past 50 years or so, and has really accelerated within the last decade. Just to illustrate this rapid pace of change, back in 1982, Europe's first wind turbine entered operation, and it had a generation capacity of 22 kilowatts. By 2010, the UK alone had a generation capacity of over 5 gigawatts. But by 2020, this had risen to nearly 25 gigawatts, five times within that decade. And across the whole of Europe, there's a combined capacity of over 220 gigawatts, with plans to double this just in the next 5 years. With this huge expansion has come some increasing efficiencies as well. The average cost for a comparable turbine over the last 10 years has almost halved, and turbines are now getting much, much bigger.
Stephen, tell us what a gigawatt of wind energy means when it comes to household electricity.
Yeah, so there's multiple different measures of power generation, focusing on sort of kilowatts, megawatts, and gigawatts. And to give you, I guess, some indication, the UK now sources around 25 gigawatts of renewable generation from wind. And that's enough to account for around 26% of the overall UK electricity supply.
26%? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I guess you could say that it's around about 100 gigawatts or so that comprises the UK's total electricity generation within a year.
I've heard that farmers in the Midwestern United States were using windmills to generate power back in the 1920s and 30s, before the fossil fuel industry built out across the nation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think one of the interesting aspects for me of renewable generation is the problem that we're trying to solve has changed a lot over the last 10 or 20 years in particular.
How has that problem changed, Stephen? What are some of today's new challenges?
I think historically people have looked at renewable generation as a way to provide an alternative power source, seeing it as adjacent to fossil fuels rather than replacing them. But I think there's increasing recognition that fossil fuels are providing a great contribution to climate change, and therefore the pace of change needs to increase. And that's certainly what we've seen over the last 10 years, where the investment in the renewable sector has grown pretty exponentially, really. A lot of new investors have been attracted to the space who want to make sure they are putting their money into industries that have a long-term sustainable angle to them.
It seems governments around the world, including the United States, are supporting the renewable energy industry to some degree.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think increasingly we are looking to governments to, I guess, maintain the momentum in renewable generation. So governments are supporting the industries in different ways, providing subsidies to renewable providers to compensate them for some of the merchant power risk. But they're also investing in the supply chain, which allows a lot of these businesses to ensure their costs are competitive and to be able to compete with fossil fuels. We've recently seen in the UK that renewables has overtaken fossil fuels as the main provider of power. That happened for the first time only a few years ago. And with the climate emergency that increasingly is being declared and recognized across the globe, we don't see any sign of that changing.
How big a player is wind in the overall impact of renewable energy compared to solar, hydropower, biofuels, and all the rest? And is it going to grow?
I think we definitely see it growing over the next few years. One of the big drivers, I think, of that and becoming increasingly important is offshore wind. As capacity for onshore wind farms decreases, people are moving towards offshore wind where there's a lot more space. There can be greater efficiencies.
So what is the typical size of some of these offshore operations compared to onshore or land operations?
You know, some of the onshore turbines installed within the US currently reach a height of sort of 574 feet, which is pretty similar to the Washington Memorial. And you typically have a wind farm of about maybe 20 turbines covering an area of 4 square kilometers.
4 square kilometers. So that's about 1.5 square miles.
Yeah. Only a small proportion of that is used to house the turbines, but there's also infrastructure, access roads for maintenance, etc. But the rest can carry on being used for farming, public amenities, etc. But when you come to offshore, that scale changes dramatically. The largest offshore wind turbine that's due to enter the market in 2024 will stand at over 855 feet, nearly as tall as the Chrysler Building.
As tall as the Chrysler Building? Wow.
Yeah. And the current largest operational offshore wind farm, that has a total of 174 turbines, a total capacity of over 1,200 megawatts, and it covers a total area of over 4,500 square kilometers.
4,500 square kilometers. Let's see, that's more than 1,700 square miles. That is huge.
Yeah, these new generation of offshore wind farms are truly vast.
Yeah, that's a big size variation. And what other ways are onshore or land-based wind energy operations and offshore wind operations different from each other?
They present different challenges, but they also have very different benefits to them. Just to briefly give you a sense of comparison, on the onshore wind side, a typical turbine probably has a generating capacity of around 2.5 to 5 megawatts per turbine. But on offshore wind, that grows to about 15 megawatts per turbine. If you were to compare some of the advantages and disadvantages, you know, onshore uses longer standing technology. It's more proven. People understand it better and clearly is lower risk. The cost of transmission infrastructure is cheaper than offshore. It's already inland, much easier to connect to the existing network. And the maintenance costs are much lower due to the location of the turbines and the lower wind speeds inland, providing less stress to the turbines. However, that's not to say that offshore doesn't have its benefits either. The winds offshore are stronger and much more consistent, particularly where the wind farms are located, which is often a very significant distance from shore. There is reduced visual disruption. You know, the turbines are further away. It's less of an eyesore to people. And it's also possible to have much larger wind farms and much larger turbines. So there are definite benefits of both. The offshore wind farms do come with an extra cost of connecting them to land before they can be connected to the network. But clearly there are benefits to that as well.
Is storing wind energy a major issue?
It's been traditionally quite difficult. During periods of high winds, significant amount of power can be generated, but this naturally falls away during periods of lower wind. However, this obstacle also presents a great opportunity. We're seeing a number of new solutions come online, including battery storage, where there's significant investment coming into that sector and providing a solution that allows generated power during periods of excess wind to be stored and used when production is lower. Another potential opportunity is green hydrogen, where wind in particular can be harnessed to extract hydrogen from water.
Wait a second. Wind can be used to extract hydrogen from water?
Yeah. Which can then be stored relatively easily and used as an alternative fuel source that's carbon free.
Amazing. Stephen, how realistic is it to think that we can retrofit infrastructure used to explore and collect oil and gas so that it can be adapted to wind and maybe other renewables? Or is that too expensive? Or could it actually help oil and gas companies make the transition into the renewable energy industry?
It's a good question. And actually, the connection of renewable generated electricity to the grid is a relatively straightforward one. It does need careful monitoring to make sure that's done correctly and in a safe and secure manner, but it can be relatively efficient. When you come on to talk about things like green hydrogen and how that gets blended into the gas network, that becomes a little bit more complex. But increasingly, that's an area of focus as we look to reduce our reliance on some of the historic fuels.
Well, Stephen, as this transition progresses, is it going to create a lot of new jobs, or for that matter, will it eliminate a lot of other jobs, especially in oil and gas?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the things we are very focused on is making sure that any transition is just. We need to be mindful of the impact on jobs and on impact on communities. But actually, there's a lot of places where the oil and gas sector in particular can leverage some of their experience and actually get involved in renewable generation. And this varies from things like offshore wind farms, where you've got a lot of oil companies that have typically done exploration out at sea, and they can use that experience to their benefit to help with installation of offshore wind farms. And the same is true in the gas sector, where you see hydrogen being produced. Existing networks can be retrofitted to handle hydrogen and also some of the blended hydrogen with some of the other gas to enable a more carbon neutral solution.
Hasn't the European Union set up a transition fund for easing into the renewables market?
Yes, they have. And I think some of the solutions that are needed over the next decade or so, and as we move towards renewable power, it will need some slightly different skills to the ones in power generation today. But you'll need to have things like operations and maintenance of wind farms. There's an increase in production in terms of turbines and blades. So inevitably, I think there will be some winners and losers from this. But overall, as we move towards an economy that is powered by renewable generation and cleaner fuels, I think that's one that will be important globally. And what we need to ensure is that there aren't sort of isolated economies that benefit from this, that this is truly a global benefit.
We're talking with Stephen Pugh, partner at London-based Hermes Infrastructure. Well, Stephen, there have been some complaints about wind power, that windmills can harm wildlife, birds and bats, for example. Are there other environmental issues too? And are companies trying to fix those things?
Yeah, yes, they are. And it's a very fair criticism. You will read stories about the number of bats and birds in particular that run into turbine blades and the impact that that causes. People are looking at innovative solutions to help solve that problem, whether it's fixing sonar devices to turbines, deter bats from entering the wind farms, through to people conducting studies into bird flight patterns that enables you to place the wind farms and the turbines in particular away from those typical routes and allowing the wind farms to co-locate alongside wildlife. But it is front and center of the developer's mind and making sure that when you're installing a wind farm, you're doing as little damage as possible to the local habitat. For the offshore wind sector, birds and bats clearly are less of a concern, less prevalent out at sea. But then obviously you've got considerations around things like disruption to the seabed and impact on marine life. So whenever we look at new projects, we take a lot of time to carefully assess the impact on the environment, biodiversity, and also other environmental concerns and impact on local communities as well.
Is that part of your criteria when you're analyzing companies as potential investment opportunities?
It is very much something that we will look at as part of any investment process. So when we're looking to invest in certainly a new wind farm or wind solution, we are looking at the approach that the company is taking to all of those issues. So making sure they have strong governance in place, making sure they've considered all the environmental considerations, making sure that any solution is fit for that natural environment, but also considers the local communities. We do also then look at a number of the technical issues in particular. So are people proposing solutions that are proven technology that have been deployed elsewhere, or are they looking for new solutions that maybe carry a bit greater risk? So all of those considerations come into account.
So when it comes to performance and risk and returns, how do renewable energy investments, and wind energy in particular, compare with other investments overall?
Yeah, they compare very well, actually. There has been a lot of investment in the wind sector. And as a natural result, that sort of has reduced returns slightly. But the reason that's come down, I think, is because a lot of the risks are better understood than they were when the industry was going through its early phases. And as that risk comes off the table, people become more accepting of a slightly lower return. The other thing I think I'd highlight is that it's still such a rich, large and diverse sector. So the risks and returns can vary enormously depending on the project. If you look at one end of the spectrum, for example, a fully operational wind farm that's onshore, it's got demonstrable track record and, you know, potentially benefiting from government support, that would be considered extremely low risk and is attractive to a lot of financial investors that are just looking for that sort of stable return. At the other end of the spectrum, if you were looking at an offshore wind farm that was pre-construction, utilizing new technologies, that would clearly be further up the risk spectrum, but would offer correspondingly greater returns. So I think within the renewable space, there's actually the opportunity for a lot of different risk appetites.
So with all of the materials needed to produce wind energy, a lot of money is being spent. Industry is being created for onshore and probably more for offshore wind projects. A lot of jobs covering many skill sets. It seems there would be a lot of investment opportunities across many types of companies.
Yeah, there are. So one of the factors associated with offshore wind is clearly the supply chain logistics that go with it. It is a much more complex undertaking than simply constructing an onshore wind farm, for example. The turbines, as I mentioned before, are significantly greater in size. So, you know, these need producers to be located relatively nearby. They often require specialist facilities at local ports to ship them out to be constructed at their final location. And there's then a whole industry around the maintenance and connection of these facilities once they're constructed. So you need to have the cabling that runs from the offshore wind farm back on land to connect it to the power grid. You need regular maintenance of the wind farms with a great number of turbines, and these can be a great distance from the shore. So you need vessels that are capable of taking the engineers out to the turbines. They need to be able to access them in a way that is safe, often in areas where there's significant wave heights and swells to cope with. So they need specialist vehicles, well-trained engineers that are capable of doing that in some fairly inclement conditions.
Well, I imagine that if you do invest in wind energy, that it's a good idea to spread your money around geographically so that you're dealing with different weather conditions, different atmospheric conditions. You're not invested strictly in wind farms in the North Sea, for example. You might have an investment linked to South America or off the coast of Africa, just like you diversify your portfolio and other investments.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You don't want to have investments concentrated within a particular area. The wind farms are typically located in places where the wind blows strongest, so that risk is mitigated to a certain extent. But there are also lots of other considerations around the location of the wind farms. We talked a little bit before, when wind generation is low, what does that do to power prices? Conversely, when wind generation is high, if you've got a lot of wind farms in the area, the power prices will inevitably fall because there's a surplus of wind generation. And that varies a lot by geography. So here in the UK, a lot of it's very focused on wind generation and solar alongside some of the more traditional sources. If you look out to the Nordics, they have a significant supply of hydro-powered electricity, for example. So when they have periods of heavy rainfall, hydro produces a lot of electricity, which might actually adversely impact the power prices that you receive for what wind generates. And all of that, I think, brings us back to how do you de-risk that from an investor perspective? Do you want to take that power price exposure? Would you prefer to enter into long-term contracts that allow you to fix that and therefore de-risk it?
Okay, as a typical investor, if I want to put some money into wind energy, how do I directly invest in the sector?
I think probably the easiest way for an individual investor to access the renewable generation market is to look at parts of the supply chain, but also some of the companies that are developing new wind farms. That would be a great place to start, but also some of the turbine manufacturers. I think do some research. There's a number of large manufacturers out there that are very experienced in the space. And for those that have a slightly higher risk appetite, look at some of the emerging technologies that people are using, such as floating offshore wind, for example.
Stephen, what happens to a wind farm when it doesn't work anymore? Is there a wind turbine graveyard?
That's a very important point and one that forms a big part of our diligence, and that's around the decommissioning costs of wind farms. These things clearly have a fixed life, so you have to do something with them when their life expired. When we're investing in wind farms, we want to look at what the possibility is to extend them as long as possible, repowering where necessary, but at some point they will become life expired. The onus, I think, is on the owners to ensure that they are disposed of in a sensible way, that you disassemble the wind farms in a way that minimizes the impact to the environment.
So, Stephen, what makes you optimistic about the future of wind power?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about when it comes to wind generation. I think we're entering a new chapter globally in terms of our engagement with the planet and the natural world. People are increasingly aware of not only their own energy consumption, but also where this energy comes from. I think renewables more broadly and wind generation specifically offer a great opportunity to satisfy the world's demand for power in a way that's sustainable and continues to reduce our carbon footprint. And for me personally, the rate at which the renewable sector has responded to this challenge over the last 10 years gives me a huge sense of optimism that over the next decade, we'll see even greater innovation and progress.
How can investors find out more about wind energy and the opportunities there?
I think there's lots of materials out there. They can look through different parts of the value chain from a wind generation perspective, from the turbine manufacturers through to the developers. And increasingly, some of the larger energy players are getting very involved in this sector. So I'd encourage people to look at different parts of the market, find one that addresses their own particular risk appetite, find ones that are developing in areas that they know, and really just to explore the sector and find out one that works for them.
And to find out more about you and Hermes Infrastructure?
They can look on our website, which is Hermes Infrastructure. That details the portfolio of companies that we're currently invested in, which does include a number of wind farms and rooftop solar, as I mentioned before.
That website is Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S, G-P-E, infrastructure.com. Thanks so much, Stephen, for being with us today. It's a fascinating topic.
Great to be with you today.
We've been talking to Stephen Pugh, partner at London-based Hermes Infrastructure, which is part of Federated Hermes. We'd also like to send out a special thanks to Paul Ellis, head of Paul Ellis Consulting, who played a key role in producing this particular podcast episode on wind power. Paul's also a regular consultant for the Socially Inspired Investor podcast and for the Socially Inspired Investor Digest, and he hosts his own podcast, the Sustainable Finance Podcast. By the way, you can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.